Okay, it's 8:40 p.m. Saturday night, July 24th, 2010.
Hello?
Hey, Doug Swank. Tom Cook here. How are you doing?
Good. How are you, Tom?
Good, good. I've got the letter that I wrote to you last August 1st of 2009, and I'd just like to read that and then ask. Rule 2, players and substitutions. Section 1, players. A team must begin the game with a minimum of 4 participants, with 1 being a female player. If a team has 6 participants, a minimum of 2 female players must be on the court. Parentheses, at no time can a team have more than 4 male players on the court. Close parentheses. Now, do you want to comment on that first, or do you want me to read my revision?
Go ahead and read your revision.
Okay. I added a comment. This is bad. Neither gender should be discriminated against. It should read like this. A team must begin the game with a minimum of 4 participants, with 1 being a female player. If a team has at least 6 participants, a minimum of 2 female players must be in the lineup to play. So what I've done is I've taken out the reference to having to have a female player on the court at any one time.
On the court, right. They're just in the rotation.
Yes, and that means right. They're guaranteed to play, and my initial comment on that is that I'm going to anticipate that Tim and others are going to object. Oh, my goodness, then you'll have a period of time. You might have a time, like, say, if you have 2 girls and you space them out evenly, you have 8 players, for example, and they will there'll be a period of time where there's no girls on the court. Oh, we can't have that because then that team will get a whole bunch of points. My initial reaction to that is, before I ask for your reaction, is that so what? That made me make an additional spice to the game. But in the next rotation, both girls are going to be got back on, and that may be a liability. So what? It all averages out in the end. So what do you think?
Well, there's 2 ways of looking at that. One is, I think it's not necessarily appropriate to think of girls as weaker players.
Well, I didn't say that in there. Nobody said that in there.
I know, but that's the mentality. That's the idea, is that they make the team less able to play defense properly, less able to compete properly.
And are you saying that that's the driving motivation behind this concept? A minimum of 2 female players must be on the court.
I think it is. And I think it's insulting to the women. There may be male players that are just as weak and unable to compete as their females,
especially in a recreational division.
Yeah, absolutely. And well, of course, my philosophy is to help each individual with their particular weaknesses. I think that
even during the games,
absolutely. And so, you know, for a gal to think, well, I can't play, I just don't see that. I see them as just another player on the team. Obviously, it's up to the coach of the team to decide the rotation starting. There are, in all my years of coaching and refereeing and running volleyball leagues, there are specific rotations that are an advantage to certain teams, and I always tried to place my team in that rotation when it was competitive in a league environment. But
you mean competitive in the church league context?
No, in a church league environment, I wouldn't play by those rules because they were fairly cutthroat, and they were intentionally designed to make it an advantage or a disadvantage.
Okay, so you're talking about a different animal now. You know, you were talking about lineups, certain specific lineups.
Right. In a specific order to gain an advantage. And I don't practice that when I'm in a church league environment. I just line people up, you know, just let them line up.
And let
everyone play. And there may be, as you said, there may be a point when you have a dominant situation on the floor where one team has a weaker player in a certain position, and In a competitive environment, you would certainly take advantage of any weak player on the court and hit the ball to them every chance you could. But, you know, that's inappropriate in a church league.
Even church and competitive division.
Yeah, and I think it's unsportsmanlike to do that in that environment.
But don't you think, though, that it is okay for a captain in a church league, competitive or recreational, to still plan a lineup, given that the rule is that this is the rotation, these eight people, Gus, you file the same person the whole game, and you can still arrange that. Like, you might want to spread the girls out, you might want to spread the hard hitters out.
Well, a lot of times what we did is we found out that one of the girls was a good passer, or a good defensive player. One of the girls might be a really good setter, and we would tend to try to place them next to a hitter. You make adjustments like that. I'm just saying there's a level of cutthroat aggression that you don't play in that type of league, even if it's competitive.
Yeah. Okay, so it sounds like then you're concurring that in reality when you make a team lineup, you don't pay any attention to gender, you just pay attention to skill and strengths.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and that, you know.
Yeah.
So.
I play to the player's abilities that I have. And if you have a player, let's say you have a girl that struggles with a certain part of the game, well, when you're sitting out of the game and not playing, you take that time to work on that skill. You help her become a better player.
Same thing if it was a weaker guy player.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay, now I think that I wrote these rules in red here, rule changes in red, revisions in red, pretty good, but I'm still humble enough to realize that you might be able to improve on it. Let me read this one again, my revision. A team must begin the game with a minimum of four participants, with one being a female player. If a team has at least six participants, a minimum of two female players must be in the lineup to play.
Yeah.
Do you see any weaknesses or ways that we can improve that?
I think that works. I mean, to say you have seven players and two of them are females, for a moment you're going to have one of them off the court. Just one rotation, it's not going to make that big a difference.
Let me play devil's advocate here and say, devil's advocate is not the right word. I'm wondering if even I'm being too sexist here. A team must begin the game over the minimum of four participants, with one being a female. I can see the four participants, but if we say with one being a female, then we're of the four being a female, we're saying...
It's a co-ed league, so I think that's important.
Well, but the problem is, see, here's what one guy suggested last year or two ago for the competitive division, and when I found him saying this, I was echoing it. He was saying the competitive division, and he was making a distinction between the divisions. Competitive division should be a men's league that women are allowed to play in. And that's what you and I basically are saying about all divisions in a church league. It's not a gender-sensitive thing, except that women get to play and be treated like everybody else. And with that mindset, even this revision of mine sounds sexist. Four participants with one being a female. What if there are very few females that want to play in the league? There might not be enough girls to go around.
If there aren't enough girls, then you make an adjustment for that. What you don't want, now we'll go to the other side and say what you don't want happening, don't want a team of five players. Say there's four guys and one girl. What you don't want is the one girl feeling bad about herself and feeling like she's going to hurt her team and leaving and letting four guys face the game.
And
so it's important to know that, okay, yeah, I'm part of this team. I may be a weak link, but I still need to be part of it. That's part of the process. Team is a group of individuals, and it's made up of strengths and weaknesses, and so you can't just miss that. So I think it's important, because it is a co-ed league, to divide the women as fairly as possible. I never have cared for the rule where you had to have two of them on the court in all rotations, because it's just that's kind of an odd... it's almost a rule that's made up because... we think you're going to cheat. make you not cheat.
How would we cheat again?
Well, in some leagues, there are teams that would basically have the women on the court and then push them over into the corner and basically play five guys, one girl sitting in the corner doing nothing.
Meaning they would plan that and the girl would have to agree to it, and they'd do that quietly and covertly, except...
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I think that's reprehensible. I don't think that's right.
Okay.
So but that I think the reason for that rule is they figure there are guys that are going to do that. Hopefully in a church league environment, they wouldn't be that way.
I would think that if that was to happen, that's a spiritual problem that needs to be dealt with separately.
Surely
and foundationally.
Right, that's outside of the league type of problem.
Do you think that maybe some kind of comments in the rules might be apropos to try to anticipate and deal with that? The reason I asked Doug is because I think that that's what's probably going to be a big objection. If guys are going to intimidate the girls and they'll feel like, well, I'll just sit out tonight or I just won't come tonight. And it may be that the reason this church has for so many years had the co-ed rules is that this is the only way they know to enforce letting the girls feel weaker players, girls feel comfortable coming out.
Well, after 17 years of being involved in all different levels of volleyball competitively as a referee and a coach, all the different things that I did, when I did start Christian singles volleyball, one of the reasons I did it is I felt that we needed to be different. And the regular leagues that I played in, there were guys that would cheat. There were guys that would do dishonest things, trip under the net, things like that. I felt like, as a Christian singles, we needed to be different. We needed to be players that invited everybody, involved everybody. We weren't being dirty. We weren't being aggressive. If I found players that were like that, that were running over other players, that were being inappropriate, it was my responsibility as the leadership, and later some of the other people that worked with me on the leadership staff, to address those issues directly. And I think in a situation like this, where it's a church league, it falls upon the person who's in charge of the league. If there's a problem like that, it falls upon that person to deal with that. If they have a player who's crooked, who's dishonest, who's cheating, who's doing things they shouldn't be doing, then I think that's the leadership's responsibility to deal with that.
So practically speaking, what would happen is that the captain, the league chairman, should inform the captains that if something like this happens, they need to, the captain needs to report that to Tim, and somehow one of them or both of them need to work together to correct the bad attitudes.
Yeah, I think it's not something that's subtle. It would be very easy to see it in a game. I mean, it would be fairly obvious.
Yeah, if you see a girl in one corner the whole time,
right.
That's obvious.
Right. So it's not, but I think that because church leagues don't know any better, they just borrow that rule. They borrow that rule from regular leagues, but the only reason that rule exists is because in regular leagues you have cheaters.
Yeah, but wouldn't cheaters...
So you don't really need it in a church league.
But wouldn't cheaters be caught by the refs just, tripping under the net? The refs wouldn't allow for that.
Not unless they saw it. If they saw it, they could issue a warning. A yellow card or a red card ejection. But you may not see it. I mean, I've played in competitive leagues where the guy across the net, when you're getting ready to block, would poke you. Distract
you. Poke you?
Yeah, I just reach under the net and poke you in the stomach.
During the game?
Yeah, and the ref's not necessarily going to see that. He's watching the ball, he's watching contact at the net. He may not see that.
Is this because the level of reffing is lower than professional, just like the level of play is?
No, it's just that the players are very subtle and they get away with things.
Well, see, why would
they don't do it on every play, obviously, because they would be caught. But a lot of times they'll do something, and as a referee, you're watching and you see something, and you go, "Did that player just?" But it doesn't register that he did, and you're like, kind of shake it off and go on seeing things. and you may not be.
So you've seen this.
I've had it done to me.
But you've seen it more than just done to you once. It's done. You've seen it done to other people. Various things.
Yeah.
So why do we not see it at the higher level of non-church stuff, like the college and pros?
Better referee.
Oh, that's what I was saying. That's what I meant when I was referring to the skill level of the referee.
At a highly competitive level.
The refs are going to catch it.
In a church league, most of the referees are watching the game.
Right, but I'm talking about what you refer to as the non-church leagues.
Yeah, in a good competitive league, the refs are going to catch it. But I've had it happen in a double B competitive league with men, and the refs didn't catch it. So, it happens.
Good.
It's just like any other sport. There are ways to cheat. There you can hide. A lot of times the refs don't recognize that a back row player went into the front row and hit the ball. There are teams that play that.
Yeah.
Keep that in there, too.
Okay, so to wrap up this section here, you're saying, I hear you right, that non-Christian recreational leagues have these rules about gender rules in order to enforce good volleyball practice of letting everybody play, and you're saying that Christians have tended to inherit those rules, when in reality we don't need those rules because we have good spiritual sportsmanship attitudes, or at least we should, easily.
Sure. Absolutely.
Okay, great. That's a big point, but we said it succinctly at the end there. In order to keep two female players on the court at all times in the same position, a captain may move, and I'm not sure what he means, but let me just read it. In order to keep two female players on the court at all times in the same position, a captain may move a female player on the bench, on the bench, ahead of a male player on the bench, or withhold a female player from entering until another female player is in the serving position. The only exception is to sub guy for guy and girl for girl if you have three girls and three guys on the court at all times.
Yeah. Now, what we found was the most effective way of doing that. Now, obviously, the rules, again, are taken from competitive rules from the FIVB, the Federation of International Volleyball Players, volleyball, and also from NCAA rules. What we found worked better was to rotate in and out at the net so that if you have eight players, or even nine, the players that are standing out are at the net. You go across the front row, you go out. Come in the back row, you go out. You go across the front row. That is by far the most effective way of making that rotation.
But
we found that to be the easiest way.
Split up the rotators among the two sides.
Right. It's just not necessary. If you rotate in a circle and everybody just rotates in and out as an individual, then the gender doesn't even play a role.
Let me go on to the shorter competitive division. Okay, this is addendum to Metro Life Church Recreational Volleyball League rules for competitive division. Competitive division will follow the rules for recreational division with the following changes. Rule 1, substitutions. A team captain is not required to follow a continuous substitution pattern, but can make any substitution at any position at any point in the game with the following restrictions. A player that is subbed out must come back into the game in the same position that they left. B, there is not limit, I mean there's no limit to the number of subs you can make. My comment is, bad rule. Substitutions for any division of a church league ministry must follow the pattern of continuous substitution. This addendum rule should be deleted and the subsequent rules renumbered. Agreed.
Okay.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay.
It's a really, it's really an awkward rule because the way they have it set up with girls not rotating and then guys rotating, that's almost an untenable rule.
That rule is
figure out where you go and when you came in and when you went out.
Well, remember, this is not continuous substitution, whereas the rec was continuous.
Right.
And the continuous allows the situation in their form of jumping ahead.
I guess what I'm saying is some of the rules they have are for
you're saying that in the if they were going to do non-contiguous substitution, they cannot enforce any girl rules.
Right.
Well, we did co-ed, and I...
That would be really weird.
I did a back row substitution, and that does fit in with this sub A, right? A player that is subbed out must come back into the game in the same position that they left. What back row only players, that's a particular application of that rule. The rule appears to be broader than that. It wouldn't have to be server position. It could be center position.
Correct.
But nobody's ever done that. All we've done is front row, back row, basically. And there's no limit to the number of subs you can make.
I don't like that one at all. But the only reason they had to put that in there is to make sure that you sub in and out for the girl.
Okay, well, I understand A better, but we agree that this whole rule should be scrapped in a church league ministry.
I think so.
Okay. And you feel pretty friendly about that, don't you?
I do.
Good. Don't be shy here.
Because you're again, I've talked to you about this before. I think it's important that your bottom line, the reason you are doing the league,
even the competitive division,
is to create community, to build relationships, and. As long as that's your goal, then everything you need to do is toward that goal. And this rule clearly is a rule that's designed about winning and losing, regardless of how it affects people. And I don't like that.
Yeah.
That goes exactly the opposite against what you're trying to accomplish.
Right.
In a church or in
we'll
in a competitive environment. Well, basically what you're saying, I just want to clarify this. When you're saying a recreational league and a competitive league, all you're talking about is skill level. You're not talking about this league is for competition. You're talking about better quality players, more experienced players.
Replace the word league with division. Recreational division and a competitive division within the league. And what happens, Let me say this. Everybody plays in the recreational, and then he has four captains, and they will go through a lottery, a draft, then they get to pick of all the people that signed up to additionally play in the competitive division. Then they pick the four captains pick a draft, do a draft to pick the players they're going to have on their competitive division. So it's an extra credit project, more or less, within the whole league.
Well, I'm a firm believer in words are important, and I don't like the use of the word competitive.
Okay.
I think it would be better to say level one, level two, or something like that.
How about B and A?
Yeah, because...
Loosely defined.
Something besides competitive, because the connotation of the word competitive is aggressive, and it is the goal is to win, and that's not the goal. And it's easy to lose sight if you think it's competitive. You lose sight of your goal.
Well, they have
relationships to encourage people, to help them build community.
And maybe even build an athletic and volleyball skill.
Sure, absolutely. Well, that comes along with it. I mean, that's part of the package.
So lower division, upper division, A and B.
It sounds like a small thing, but I think it's important.
Yes, because the words that things that we say affect how we think.
Absolutely.
And I can tell you, in my opinion, in my experience, these 3 years I've been here, it does affect people's thinking. They use the word competitive and say, oh, well, this is the competitive division, therefore we're going to do back row, front row, and all that crap.
Whatever's needed to win,
Would you say? Let's think of a good way to respond to somebody who says, "But I want to play competitive. I want to win." Wouldn't it be something like, "We want to play harder in this upper level, have the fun of being able to play at a higher skill level, but it's still for fun, and we want everybody to play equally and play hard, and we're not here mainly to win, even at the upper division, right?"
Sure. I mean, in Christian singles volleyball, now at the same time, okay, I'm playing Christian singles volleyball every Sunday, and most Wednesdays and Thursdays in the park in the summertime. At the same time I'm doing that, I'm generally playing in other leagues, and I'm also coaching and refereeing. So 5 nights a week I'm doing volleyball. And I played in a double A league with NCAA level volleyball players, guys that had played. One of the guys on my team was a setter at the University of Florida on the men's volleyball team. So these guys are serious as a heart attack. I mean, they are big time. We're there to pound the ball and to play real volleyball. That is a completely different thing than the church volleyball environment.
Even no matter how high the skill level in the church might go.
Yeah, we had A players in our church organization. At Christian singles volleyball, like I said, I'm playing Christian singles on one night, and then 2 nights later I'm playing in almost an open level A volleyball league, men's league. And for me, the one was ultra cutthroat competitive, as hard as you could go. But the other was completely different. Even though I had the skill level to do both, the whole point of it is it's not about your skill level. It's what you're about and an attitude about what you're doing for the volleyball. Why are you doing this? Why are you playing this? I wanted to play one to hone my own skill and ability, and that's where I got my competitive aggression out. But we had players from all levels playing at Christian singles, from beginner all the way up to A.
Let's touch briefly. Do you have a problem with there being a general level that everybody plays in, and then a more advanced level within a church league, like we're doing?
No, I don't have a problem with that at all. I mean, we had a time every night. We played every Sunday for 4 hours. We rented a gym for 4 hours. Okay?
Uh-huh.
And we didn't divide teams up until after the first hour, so everybody had a chance to get their warm up. We ran clinics that first hour. Some people ran hitting lines, did different things. And the last 3 hours were hours blocked out for actual competition, playing as teams. We divided the teams up, started play, and then the last hour was designated, that one of the courts was designated as an advanced level four. And the very best players that were there went on that court, played all-out volleyball. Now, that had two effects. One was it let the better players, the higher-level players, get out some of their pressure and compete at that level, which was fun for them. And it also showed the other players what could be done. They could come and watch if they wanted to. They could keep playing if they wanted to. A lot of them would just come and watch, and watch the better players all together and get a feel for what it was like. And it gave them motivation to try to get to that level. But the 2 hours in between the first and last hour, everybody played together.
Now, did you have problems with people that wanted to play in the fourth hour but shouldn't have?
Yeah.
How did you deal with that?
I took all the heat for that.
What would that look like?
Well, I went down the list, and I ranked the players. That was one of the first things I did. That was partly my job. When I came in, I ranked all the players based on their skill. And people would come over and say, I'm a better player than he is. And I said, well, you're a better hitter than he is. That doesn't, you can't pass the ball very well. You're not a good defensive player. He's a better all-around player.
So you
have to look at all the skills.
And you're looking at these skills took place over a period of how long?
About an hour. But I knew players. I knew everybody.
No, well, but when you first started this, though, I mean, when you were starting this program.
Well, when we first started, we all played together, all together, the whole time.
Oh.
And you have to remember, this is a program that went on for over 10 years. It may still be in effect. I don't know. I haven't been back in a long time.
So
I ran the program over 7 years myself.
So for a period, the initial period of time that the group existed, you advocated not having an upper level of play.
Correct.
How long did that go before you and the group felt ready to have this fourth separate hour where you ranked everybody?
About 3 years.
3 years?
Yeah, by the time we averaged around 50 to 70 players a week after the first couple of years.
Well, are you saying that it took you 3 years to learn the skill level of everybody there?
No. It took that long before we decided to open up the upper, to do that.
For the last hour. Well, the reason I'm asking is because I'm trying to use this discussion, this part of the discussion, as a model for if somebody wanted to start a program like that, how long do they need to wait before you can have the fourth hour, as in your example, of upper. And it sounds like it's hinging on how long it takes the chairman to evaluate the skill levels of the players.
Basically, when we first started, got a lot of, it's hard to explain if you don't know the levels. Basically, what is considered USBBA D level is recreational, just beginner volleyball players.
What, D as in David?
Yes. C as in cat. C level players are players that know how to play basic volleyball. B level players are players that start running advanced offenses and defenses. You start running 6-2 offenses, 5-1 offenses, you start running stack defenses, things like that.
Yeah.
AA and A players are they're basically NCAA players would be considered A or open.
Uh-huh.
Open players are Olympic athletes and professionals.
Yep.
So those are your different levels. When we first started out, we had mostly C players.
Mostly what?
Mostly C.
C as in Charlie?
Right, and some D players.
D as in David.
Yes. We had a few B double B players.
A few what? Double B?
A few in the B category, B double B, yeah.
Okay.
And as time went by, we got more and more of those players. And more of the C level players, because we were running clinics, and they were playing with the better players, they started moving up and becoming better skilled. The whole program, basically, we had people that came in, couldn't play a lick of volleyball. I can think of one person in particular who was just horrible. He ran all over the place and threw the ball and was just a terrible volleyball player. After 4 years, he was playing at A-level competitive. Was a terrific player and had absolutely fabulous skills. I mean, that tended to be what happened with our players.
Can you tell me that neat story again about what happened with that one girl who just wanted, she didn't like everybody else getting better, she didn't want to get better, she just wanted to hit the ball around, forget about the pass set spike. Tell me what happened with her.
Well, she was a thorn in the flesh for quite a while. She tried several ways to force us to
what?
Well, she tried to organize a revolt.
What did she not like?
She didn't like that we were playing six-man and that we played competitive rules, that we wanted to play offense, bump, set, and spike. She wanted to just get a bunch of people and want to play, you know, head the ball around and just have
even with 9 people outside.
Right. And she started her own thing, her own kind of league with a church group, and that lasted all of a month. And most of the people that went with her came back, and eventually she did too, and she came back, and she was like sick of playing with people who didn't know how to play, and didn't, you know, guys running over her and stuff like that. That was something we didn't tolerate. We didn't tolerate guys running all around the court, knocking girls around and stuff like that.
Oh, you're saying that when she started her own rebel group that lasted for a while, there were people that were, they were just, they had the same mentality she did, but she didn't like that because she was getting run over.
Right.
You got a taste of her own mentality.
Exactly.
She didn't realize where her mentality leads in some cases.
Exactly.
So she came back, and what happened?
She came back. She played with us for quite a few years.
Well, come on, I'm waiting for the punchline here. How did she change?
Oh, well, she got better. And you know, I mean, I know that there were several people that said similar things to me, but one gal that came and started playing with us after 3 or 4 years and starting to play in leagues and being, you know, playing doubles outdoors and having a lot of fun, she came to me and told me that I had ruined her. And I said, what do you mean I ruined you? And she goes, because I went to a picnic the other day and they were playing volleyball and I tried to play. It was horrible. And I realized I can't play that kind of garbage ball anymore.
Well, this was not the same girl that started the Renegade group?
No.
It was a similar girl.
Yeah, it was another gal that had come. And when she first came, she didn't know anything, and we worked with her. She learned and got better and enjoyed it.
And you see, go ahead.
Well, it's like a lot of things. I mean, we were never taught how to play volleyball correctly when we played it in school. And it was a humiliating experience for a lot of kids. And picnic-type jungle ball is that same way. What we were trying to do was help people get better themselves in their own lives, help them develop relationships. So a part of that is teaching them the basics of it. And volleyball is a really a good sport for anybody to learn, because you don't have to be tall or anything to be a good volleyball player.
Can you comment briefly on the idea, why do you feel that volleyball is a true team sport, whereas many other sports really are not? And name sports, too.
Okay, well, most sports deal with football, basketball, even hockey, are sports where they revolve around a star. They revolve around a player who is head and shoulders above everybody else.
And you've played a lot of these sports yourself.
Yes, I have. Played all of them, actually, except for hockey. I didn't ever play hockey. I played soccer, and I played football, and I played basketball. They're sports where one player can make all the difference. You look at a team like, well, in pro basketball, a guy like Cleveland Cavaliers in the past. Great, now I can't think of his name.
Don't worry about it.
anyway, you know, one star player Kobe Bryant for the Lakers, that's a perfect example.
Yeah.
One star player can carry a team. And the other players are just sort of there to fill in the holes. You really can't do that in volleyball. There are a set of skills that everybody has to have. And, I mean, you play, when you watch the Olympic team play, they have specific roles that are set up for them. But I guarantee you, in their practices, they all play all the positions. They have to know the skill of the other parts of the game.
Because you never know when they may have to deviate from their designated specialized role and do what everybody else does.
Yeah, absolutely. And only at that level of competition where you're up making, you know, competitive level like that, like the Olympics or professional ball, do they do that. Every other level, even for that matter, NCAA competition, they don't specialize nearly so much.
Well, they do special a lot more than us low-level recreational stuff.
Oh, yeah, they do, but
they specialize at all. To me, it's either they're specializing at all or not. You're saying they might even specialize at a higher level in the Olympics than in NCAA.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Okay.
Yeah. NCAA players, very often you watch the rotations, and a player will stay in a whole game, rotate through all the positions, even though they have one center. every player has to know how to set, because sometimes the setter gets taken out of a play or is not in a position to take a pass, the ball gets changed or something.
And you're saying everybody in the Olympics that doesn't happen, huh?
Very rarely. Huh. Oh, you'd be amazed at the talent. The talent level in the Olympics is frightening. It really is.
Yeah.
I mean, the U.S. team, one of the reasons the U.S. team won the gold medal with Carson Garay and those guys is because they could pass like you would not believe. They were so fundamentally sound at passing the serve. It was just amazing.
Well, let's get off that tangent back to why is volleyball a team sport and others are not.
Okay. Well, because of that. Because every player has to be able to do every part of the game.
At any level.
At any time, any place. You have to be prepared. There are six people on the court. You can't run an eye.
Or an X.
You can't dominate the game. That's what makes it so wonderful is I may be an incredible athlete, and on a basketball court, I can dunk the ball and dribble the ball, and I can dominate the game. But in volleyball, I have to have other people to be part of it. I cannot dominate the game by myself. And because there's a dependence on other players to pass, set, find, and block, and play defense, it's a team sport. It's a whole body of individuals on the court that have to play together in order to succeed, because there's more than just one player. There's more than just one skill. One player cannot pass the ball to himself, set the ball to himself, and then hit the ball. You have to have everybody involved. On defense, you have to have somebody in each part of the court playing a defensive position. You just can't, you know, that, I mean, it is, it requires everybody.
So do you feel that because of this, it might, if you wanted to pick a sport to help people in a church become more athletic as well as enjoy each other's company better, you would pick volleyball instead of basketball or soccer to do that?
Yeah, I would.
And you've done it.
And I've done it, yeah. That's why I started Christian Singles Volleyball. At one point, we had over 300 members. We rented a high school gymnasium that had six nets. We had people playing in leagues all over the city. We had a very profound impact on the city of Denver, I do, in the volleyball community.
Do you think you had an impact in the context? Well, of course, this is an interdenominational thing. Do you think if that could be applied within a local church, that could greatly help physically and relationally? Physical health of the members and in the ways that you and I believe that engaging in a sport, even if we've never done a sport before, does help us physically, but also in our attitudes toward one another, our relationships, and our personal self-esteem, if I can use that word, at great risk.
Let me answer it this way.
Better than the other sports.
What other reason would you have sports in the church at all?
And an opportunity for those who want to do it. You know, for example, we had pick up Ultimate Frisbee.
Uh-huh.
And that's not a team sport like you're saying. Volleyball is.
Right.
They have basketball league, and they have several leagues. There's the women's league. There was the men's league, but they broke it up into men under 30 and then men over 30.
Uh-huh. And why do they do? Why do they come and play? Just to play basketball? Just to exercise?
Well, I
seriously doubt it.
Would there be anything wrong if they did? It's a chance for Christians to do this competitive basketball thing within our division.
I don't think there's anything wrong if somebody just wants to play basketball, but
it happens to be in a church.
I find it hard to believe that anybody does that. If you want to play competitive basketball, there's a lot better venues. I think people come to a church to do it because they want to play with like-minded people.
Well, I say it's within, this is a very tight-knit church. Generally, people in other churches don't come to it. It's within the congregation. It's a chance for people to do something as a congregation.
Exactly. So it's a fellowship. It's a building of relationship, building practice. It's part of the ministry of the church.
And yet they still do the basketball leagues that way, in that context. And you're saying that volleyball is more conducive to those, the goals that a church league of any sport would do than basketball.
I believe it is.
Yep.
I believe that especially in a co-ed environment, because co-ed doesn't work well for basketball or football for that matter either.
Yeah.
There's so much more. Well, I mean, like I said, I've played a lot of different sports. I actually played team handball once, and we competed against the U.S. Olympic team, which is a really unusual sport. But you don't have any contact really with the other players. You're all out there running your position. It's like in soccer, you run and run and run. There may be a couple of players who kind of communicate with each other, but there's really not much communication or closeness. When you're playing on the volleyball court, there's communication going on all the time. And you get, you talk to the person next to you, you get to know them, I just think it's...
But wouldn't some people allege you have that in basketball?
No, I don't think so.
I mean, you got communication going on.
Very little, because you're constantly moving up and down the court, and if you're playing defense, you're moving with another player. I don't think that. I mean, in volleyball, you're always next to. You tend to be next to the same person for an entire game.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of a different sort of effect in that respect. I think. Obviously, it's not quite the same at a competitive level or a high level, but I think there's more chance on the volleyball court to communicate, make contact with each other than there is in almost any other sport.
Yeah. Any closing comments about that or anything else we've talked about?
I don't know that. Just the thing at the beginning, I think I told you this before, that I worked with a pastor who went up to a board and he wrote on a board one thing. And he said, everything we plan as a church and as a group, we're going to put what our goal is at the top. And everything about what we do has to achieve that goal. And I think as a church, when you talk about athletics, your ultimate goal is relationship and community. And so everything you do, including the rules and how you evaluate who plays and what's done, needs to reflect that. And if you have something that interferes with the community, interferes with the relationships between people, then you need to get rid of it.
Would you agree that one of the things that interferes with that is these various girl rules that my league has embraced for so many years?
Yeah, I think that some of the quote-unquote girl rules, I don't like them. I don't necessarily like them called girl rules.
Well, I'm just trying to refer to all the things we've talked about earlier.
I know what you're saying. I think that, to me, one of the first things that needs to go is the word competitive.
Agreed.
And once you've gotten rid of that word, then it becomes a higher level of skill, but we're all still the same team. We're all still together. And instead of having, there's five people here that are really competitive and the rest of you are just in the way, because that's where you start that mentality. And to me, that's what, everybody talks about. Well, everybody talks about, you play in a league, and a lot of people have played in different sports. You play on a team where you're maybe not the best player and you sit on the bench a lot. You're not going to get anything out of that. It's really a dissatisfying feeling.
But do you still have to deal with the problem of somebody wants to play in the upper, the A group, the A division, like I said before, everybody plays in the B, and I'll relabel them right now. Everybody plays in the B division. Some want to play in the A, no extra charge for it, but you got to be accepted. And what they did last year was interesting. He had a draft. You probably know about more of how those work than I do. You heard that term?
Yeah.
Okay, so they did a draft, had the four captains, and they ended up, you know, having giving money, and people would bid on this or that player, and it ended up working out that they ended up getting all the players that they wanted, or at least reasonably, and some people did not get picked. And you didn't know until the end of the draft which people actually were in the division.
Right.
Does that sound like an acceptable way to deal with the problem of, well, Sally thinks she's super, but she's really crummy and shouldn't play up here. She simply won't get picked, and that's okay, right?
Well,
I mean, because not everybody that signs up for
probably,
B and for A is going to get picked.
Yeah, that's probably the touchiest issue we have to deal with. And I had to deal with it a lot because I told you about how we divided our program in the last hour.
Yeah.
I got a lot of flack sometimes.
But a draft would solve that, wouldn't it? At least in our case.
To some degree. If I were drafting a team and I said to you...
No, drafting a team in a context where all four teams are drafting a team from a pool.
Right. Right, and if the rule was that every player had to play all positions,
yeah,
would I be so quick as to grab the guy that's the tallest and could dominate in the front row but can't pass worth a lick?
Right. Well, now you're getting into some of the implications of our other rule changes.
Exactly.
But just the general concept
of
a draft.
I think that would have a very well. To me, it's you draft based on overall ability.
Yes.
Every part of it, not just one particular aspect.
But I'm just trying to get you to agree or disagree that a draft is a good way to form the teams in a higher level division, and especially in a case where not everybody who requested to be in the division will make it. Sounds to me like it's a better way with less...
It works out okay. I would say it works out okay. The other method is you have to have somebody who is capable of evaluating talent or ability.
Like you did, and you were the one, and you got all the flack.
Yeah. And you have to have somebody that will do that objectively and prayerfully.
Yep.
And believe me, I spent a lot of time on my knees about it. Because that is so critical.
Well, with a draft, you don't need all that.
Well, I think you do in a draft, too.
Well, I mean, you need prayer, but I mean...
I think that the people who make the draft need to be... need to examine their hearts as well.
Yeah.
Because they might choose to bring another player and say, you know what, as far as a team... player, this player will be a better addition than that one, even though he or she looks like she'd be a dominant force.
Yeah.
I think this person's a better balance. They know the whole game better. I mean, there's...
So what bearing does that have on whether a draft is used or not?
It doesn't.
Okay.
I think that the players who make the draft, I think, like, what I'm saying is that if you change the rule... where everybody has to play every position, and they can't sub out and play just the front row, that's going to change a little bit how the draft is looking.
You know, it's just going to change how the dynamics of the draft sessions play out.
Exactly.
It's going to change. Sure, okay, well, fine. But I'm just right now trying to evaluate legitimacy of using a draft to pick the upper-level players from the pool of those who've requested it. Seems to me like a good idea. Once somebody explained it to me.
I think it is a good idea. I can see where a little of that playground mentality of I didn't get picked or I got picked last would run into that and could cause some hard feelings.
They've already said that in the announcement, that just because you request upper division does not mean that you will necessarily get picked. So people realize that.
Hopefully.
Yep.
still doesn't mean they don't get their feelings hurt.
Yeah.
I think that's probably a good way of doing it.
Well, I thought that I was going to be done with it, but there is a wrinkle I just now remembered. We got to go back to the co-ed situation.
Oh, okay.
Doing a draft for the upper division, we're now raising to get picked. Should they be required to pick any girls at all? See, in the past, they did still have to follow all those girl rules, and it's upper division is generally not hard because there are a lot of good female players. And what they did do was they had a wrinkle in that the captains were allowed to kind of use female players. And there were some, not last year, but year before, some female players got in the upper division that were worse than me, but and I didn't get to be in it. Now, I don't think they ran a draft, but I can't remember how it went last year. I remember my captain was able to pick his wife. That was his choice because they were married, and that was, I think, one of the rules.
You had to pick your wife?
No, you could pick your wife.
Oh.
I think that had an overriding factor in some regard. But if we were to implement all the rule changes that we talked about earlier, do you think we could just ignore gender, or should there still be a requirement of a certain number of girls beyond each team? A quota of girls has to be maintained from the pool.
Yeah.
I haven't even thought about this.
I think so. I, you know, all things considered, you're still having to deal with that. Now, I can think of girls who would smack me silly for saying it, but I still think you would have guys who would selectively take a team and didn't have any girls on it just because they saw girls a week later.
Well,
I think you do have to have a requirement in the draft for that. It's a co-ed league.
Well, then when we run into the problem of, I still feel like my friend who said a couple years ago, let the upper division be a men's league that women are allowed to play in without gender distinction.
Well, that is what it is.
What?
That essentially is what it is. You're playing on a men's high net.
Well, no, I'm talking about regard to he was saying have no female quotas, and I was thinking like that before, but now that I'm thinking about a draft, is there a problem with eliminating female quotas? See, so I say this in part because keep in mind that there are some really good women players there.
Yeah, well, that would all depend on how objective the people picking the teams were.
What would be wrong with having no girl requirements? Girls can play, but it's strictly a merit only, which is the same thing with the guys. And if a team ended up having no girls on it,
because of the tendency for guys to pick guys that objectively aren't as good of players as the girls.
Well, I mean, you see, that's going to hurt them because if they do that, then the better players, the girls, will be on the other team.
They'll still do it.
Well, that's okay. I mean, if they want to hurt their team by keeping it guys only.
Well, keep in mind that we're still talking about a church league relationship. I think you have to include the girls as part of it.
Are you saying that some qualified girls would get skipped over because they're girls?
Yes.
Why would anybody who's a captain of the upper division do that at all? I mean, if they know this girl is good. What?
Because they're guys. Because they got testosterone.
I can't imagine that. I mean, I know
the way
girls.
Guys think. Guys just see girls.
I don't think that way.
Until you played in a game with a girl that kicked your tail because she was so much better than you, you really don't look at girls as being equal competitors.
I think that here in this church league, they do see girls as equal if they are equal. The skill levels, are perceived heavily.
If that was true, then you wouldn't need that rule.
Okay. If we do have the rule, what should it be? Minimum two girls?
You have to evaluate that.
Okay. But you would agree, though, that if we do have minimum number of girls on the team, that we should still follow the rec rules that I suggested earlier of not having a distinction during the course of play and rotation.
Yeah.
Good. Thank you. The last good.
We did that's the way that we did it, and it worked very well. And the girls didn't ever have a problem with it.
You're talking about your fourth hour upper level. Oh, you're talking about in both of your levels, right?
Still there?
Yes, I'm still here. You're talking about in both of your levels, the girls had no problem?
No, the girls, we played that way where the women just rotated. Everybody rotated as a player and not as a gender.
Right.
Everything we did was that way.
Okay.
And the girls never had any problem with it. They were part of every team. And
right.
It worked, you know. I mean, there were people that felt they went, well, is this going to work? And it's like, yeah, it will.
What were they asking? Were they asking, is this? You mean they were thinking that maybe we need to have a gender rule?
Yes. There was quite a bit of debate about that. There were people that felt, you know, and I mean, when I made decisions, I went around and I talked to people and I asked them what they thought and what they felt and what was going on. And I would compare whatever I had, and then I would go before the Lord and spend quite a bit of time trying to, you know, find out, you know, I mean, I'd spend a lot of time in prayer that I would make a correct decision.
Well,
and then I would explain it to anybody who asked. Why did you do this way? Well, because I believe that the women are just as capable as the men. There's no reason that they should be singled out as a weaker or as a balancer or whatever. I think they should just be part of. I think it's a double-edged sword because some women will feel like you're cheating them, but other women will feel like you're respecting them.
Yep. Did you have any experience before you coming into having to make this decision? What experience had you had? None?
I'd been playing in co-ed rec leagues and with women volleyball players for several years.
And were some of those leagues co-ed gender sensitive and others gender insensitive in the co-ed context?
All the competitive leagues I played in that were co-ed, women had to stay on the court at all times.
So it was gender sensitive?
Absolutely, yeah.
But you had played in lower level stuff where it was gender insensitive and you found that, hey, we don't have to be gender sensitive.
I played in open gyms where there was no gender requirement.
Am I right that you, through that experience, you concluded we don't have to distinguish between gender?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the open play that I played was better level than the league play, but the women were much more substantial players.
That puts an even better spin on our argument here, then.
Yeah. So we played teams. I would pick girls a lot of times for my team, given the choice, because they're usually better passers, and passing is the fundamental skill of volleyball.
Yeah. If you had to pick one thing, it's the passing, and I've told people that before.
Yeah, that's it. That's the fundamental. I mean, I used to work with my when I coached high school, I used to make the girls play just passing.
Yep.
They weren't allowed to set or spike. They had to pass the ball for a set. They had to pass the ball over the net. And that's the skill that makes you a better player.
Did you have some things you wanted to add about the subject of using the term competitive in describing one of our two leagues?
We talked before a little bit about it. One of the things that we found in our program, in our volleyball program, was that there were some sensitivities with some people to the terminology. The words that you use give an instant picture of a sort of what's going on. Obviously, if it's just a recreational program of some sort, like a YMCA or an open gym or something, that those terminology is something you really wouldn't worry too much about. However, in a ministry environment, it's important to consider those things because I think that it has an effect on the individuals. Certainly it's something that in our program we spend a lot of discussion time and a lot of prayer about because words have effects on people. And one of the things that we sought to do in our terminology was to lessen any repercussions that may have come from, you know, all of us that went to school as children or played in the backyard, remember, you know, picking teams, and there's always those who felt like I was the last one picked, and there was some sore feelings there, and to some degree, when you start using words like competitive or better or whatever, you kind of give the connotation that some people are inferior, and certainly you don't want to create that issue. And also, you talk about, say, the term competitive. When you say I'm playing competitive, you kind of, especially to men, you give the impression of aggression, of sort of a, all right, this is competitive, you know. And sometimes, you know, I think in that environment, it's probably better to use other terms. I know in our program, we eventually settled on less experience and more experience. In our decision was that it connotated to the people who are playing at the lower level that through effort and training and work, they certainly had the ability to move to the more experienced area. It also, in a sense, kept the upper level from being sort of a cocky, you know, gunslinger attitude of, you know, we're the best. So that was our determination. In our discussion, my discussion with you, we've talked about upper and lower division, which certainly I think deals fairly with that idea of the upper division is clearly for a higher level of play, but not necessarily cutthroat competitive, and the lower division is just a division for people that's more relaxed. That comes off, I think, somewhat better than competitive and non-competitive, no matter. I mean, once you say the word competitive, no matter what you call the lower division, it's automatically non-competitive. There's no way around that.
And is that bad? What is bad about using the word competitive as a label? This is the competitive league versus the recreational league.
Well, I think it connotates aggression. I think it connotates,
what bad things are happening in people's minds, even if it's just on a subconscious level, when we call our upper division the competitive league instead of, like, the upper league?
Well, there's nothing necessarily bad about competition. But again, like I said, if you're talking about ministry, what it does is it isolates, in the mind at least, the concept that this is only about competing and winning. It's not about anything else. And obviously in a ministry environment, your consideration is completely different from just competing and winning. One of the things one of the ways that we described it in our program when people asked questions like that was, we said, there are two types of situations when it comes to playing volleyball. One of them is you come to play volleyball. The other one is using volleyball as a tool of ministry. Those are two very distinctly different things. If the goal of the league is just to have fun and play volleyball, then fine, that doesn't matter. But if the goal indeed is a ministry environment where you're trying to establish community and build relationships and build a personal character and traits in individuals, then that is something you have to very much consider. And it's So that was our kind of way of thinking about it. Are we here just to play volleyball? If we are, who cares? If we're here to do something in people's lives, then small things like the way you, the terms you use and the way you approach it have an effect.
And was this just you talking, or did the other people you were discussing this with end up feeling this way too?
Yeah, well, that would have been the decision of the board of directors. We had 5 to 6 individuals who worked with the program as leadership that voluntarily undertook different aspects of the leadership roles and making sure that things were handled properly. And we spent once a month, we'd get together and we would discuss issues like that. A lot of times we'd go out, and if there was a problem that arose, we would talk to people, say, well, what are you feeling? How are you feeling about this or that?
You survey the membership.
Yeah, to get as much information as we could. We spend quite a bit of time, I know myself, I spent a lot of time in prayer, especially early on when I was pretty much running the whole thing and had a little bit of help from some others, but at about the third year, we had established a, I don't know if you call it charter of membership or whatever, a document that basically we legally incorporated is what we did. And the reason we did that was to establish, had more to do with our rental of facilities and issues of safety and things like that. But in doing so, we created a statement of purpose and vision. And, a lot of things were entered into that official. And of course, anybody had the right to look at it. What we were doing, where the money was going. We had open books.
Right. So all 5 of these board members were believers?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Well, that was one of the things that we established, I established from the very beginning, was because of the high number of single people in Denver, my desire was to see them not just come together as a community of volleyball players to get to know each other, but also to become involved in a local church. So I went around to a number of different churches and asked the pastors, explained what we were doing, asked the pastors if we could use their church as a reference to say to people that came to our program, well, you know, why don't you visit this church or go visit that church, give them an opportunity, because we felt that it was important that this was a Christian volleyball program, and our emphasis was to get people involved in the Christian community, and that includes the church, obviously. I mean, I don't know if I've answered your question.
Well, I mean, I'd asked you if you were the only one, or were you alone in this thought that the usage of the word competitive is not a good thing?
No, certainly not. I mean, like I said, it was a discussion among the group. We all felt that it was important.
The whole board.
Yeah, there was a voting stance on all these things. We all were in either agreement or occasionally there was a dissenting voice, but not very often. Most of the time, we all felt the same way that the terms we used in any different area of the program was important. Because it created an environment. If you said we're running a clinic for advanced players, well, you automatically force people to decide: am I an advanced player? Are they an advanced player? Should I go? Should I not go? I don't know. You know, we try to avoid that sort of situation.
But you've got to have some sort of definition of what a particular function is going to do. So if you are going to run a clinic, you have to put adjectives on it.
We're of the opinion if anybody was welcome to come to a clinic that wanted to come. We didn't bar anyone from coming to a clinic, and that was one of the things.
Okay, so the usage of the word competitive in defining a league or division was not the only case where you were working hard to guard your language.
Yes, absolutely. Because yeah, there's a lot, there, like I said, like, we all have passed and we all have been selected for sports teams. We've all played sports where there's been a ball hog or somebody that thought they owned the court, and there's been people that were timid and afraid, and we tried the very best we could to avoid cauterizing those feelings by, you know, well, we actually attempted, I always attempted whenever we had someone new, I would try to introduce them to a player who I had asked earlier to volunteer to assist, and that person would generally stay with that new player all day, be on the same team, work out with them between, you know, and help them out, and just, you know, give them pointers, help them feel like they were part of it, incorporating them, and that obviously all is part of what the ministry is involved with. We tried to destigmatize, you know, you're better, you're not, you're this, you're that. It's counterproductive, in my estimation.
Okay.
It's much simpler to divine things in neutral terms.
As neutral as you can without losing descriptive. So you feel that lower division and upper division are okay?
Sure, because they only connotate. They're very limited in what they're in their connotations.
Okay, and if we were to call the divisions leagues, you could say the same thing. You have the lower league and the upper league.
Sure.
Okay.
I just find competitive to be a difficult term because it connotates so much mentally, you know, as far as the image it portrays.
And you're saying this being a guy who has had a lot of years being very, very competitive yourself.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, there, you know, oddly enough, it's like what I said about we're separating playing volleyball from playing, from the ministry. We encouraged everybody in the ministry to get involved in playing volleyball in leagues so that they could compete. In a secular environment, and that would give them a very clear picture of the difference between what we were doing and what they were doing in a league, per se.
Uh-huh.
So we always had lots of players competing at all different levels in a secular environment where things are very well defined, and they say, well, you're a B player, and you're an A player, and you're not, and you're this, and, you know, competition was the only purpose of some of that, and we encouraged people to do that outside of our program because that gave them a very clear image of what we were doing that was so different from just going to a gym and competing.
He's got two more paragraphs that are longer than that one. Keep in mind, Tom, there doesn't have to be an official competitive league. There didn't used to be. In the rec league, which is all that we have in basketball, we only have a rec league. We did not add a competitive league. Everyone plays equally, all positions, etc., just like you say. But we added it for the sake of playing more competitive volleyball with more normalized substitutions / rotations / strategy, which get thrown out the window in the rec league. If we want to make... What?
Oh, I need a shovel.
Well, let me finish the paragraph. He says, we added the competitive volleyball league for the sake of playing more competitive volleyball with more normalized substitutions, rotation strategy, which things get thrown out the window in the rec league. If we want to make competitive league almost exactly like the rec league, then why did we create the competitive league in the first place? Let me read the last paragraph. At some point, you either can accept that we created the competitive league with different goals than the rec league, or you can't. I can, and maybe I'm wrong. If your opinion is that by changing the rules in order to be more competitive, by that I simply mean better volleyball, we're sacrificing, I think he's saying, if your opinion is that by us having rules that make the competitive league more competitive, we're sacrificing the fun and the community and the building of relationships, then that's your opinion. I simply disagree. And I don't think it's unfair to anyone because, again, we already have another league to play in. But to be quite honest, it's not that big of a deal to me. If we want to have a rec league and an even more rec league, then let's do it. I can find competitive volleyball by joining random leagues with Tim, Ashley, Scott, et cetera, anywhere else. And he does raise a point. I mean, if
it's such a load of crap. You know what? What he says is the fellowship and the community and the fun and all that is still in the upper league, only for the players who get to play all the time. All of the other players, it's not there for them. They're humiliated. They're insulted. They're treated badly.
Well, then why didn't he?
That is completely, completely outside the realm of a ministry.
Why did he say that he had no problem in another context playing back row only? He wanted to help the team.
That doesn't even make sense. I lowered my standards to play the back row. I mean, that's...
What he's saying is that he had fun doing that.
I haven't seen any of these people play.
They're good. They're good.
It sounds like they're not very good volleyball players.
No, they are good. And now when I talked about Jesse, he's not good at back row. But with Jake, he is good.
Then he's not a good volleyball.
Well, no. But I'm talking about Jake. Jake is talking about when he says Tim, Ashley, Scott, himself. These are good players. They're good all around players. And so when he plays in these competitive leagues outside the church, he might be just a liberal. And he's happy with that. And he seems to be saying that you could do that and still have good ministry aspects.
I don't know how. I mean, the whole reason that I started Christian Singles Volleyball was I played in competitive leagues. And the part that was missing was the reason we started a separate program.
And what part was that?
The ministry. Okay. I mean, yeah, if you want to go play solid, competitive volleyball and that's your only reason, then go play. Go play someplace.
Which means you might never get to set. You might play back row only. You might play front row only. You'll play only half the time sometimes.
Well, I never played in a situation like that. I mean, any league that I played in, I played a majority of the time. There were players that subbed in, but we made sure that players got to play all the time. I hardly ever had any situation where...
Well, take the situation where it works. Somebody is so you're going to play back row only. Now, did you experience that situation in your competitive leagues?
No.
So you're saying even outside the scope of ministry context that people generally played everything. What about setters? I mean,
the only time, well, normally you have setters. And they are established in a position. The only time I ever played where he didn't have players who played the whole game, all positions, even USVBA competition, I never played where we had players. Of course, USVBA rules, you're not allowed to substitute the way they're talking about substitution. That's part of my problem too. Is they're not doing substitution by the rules. So anyway, so what's the problem
Well, can you very briefly describe what they're doing that's in violation of the rules? I thought it's legitimate to have a person that's back row only and another person that's front row only.
Yeah, but you can only do it a certain number of times in a game. You can't do that continuously throughout the game. When I coached high school, if there was a point in the game where I felt like I needed a strong defensive player only in the back row, and I wanted to sub her in and have her play across the back row, I could not do that every time she rotated to that side. I would run out of opportunities to substitute.
Are you saying USVA does not allow for front row and back row only players?
Well, you can do that, but you can't do it the entire game.
No, I mean, you're saying they don't allow it the whole game.
Right. You have a limited number of substitutions.
And we've had unlimited, basically.
Right.
That's why I played in back row only the whole game.
Right. Yeah, you can only do that strategically. That is a strategic, strategic's a bad word. It's a tactical advantage. When I bring in my special server or I have a defensive-only player come in the back row that plays, just bites out defense, then they're short and they don't play very well in the front row, I may do that, but I can't do that throughout the whole game. I can only do it once or twice in a game. Otherwise, I run out of substitution.
Yeah.
And then I can't substitute anybody.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, this is not even, I mean, it's not even, wouldn't even be considered fair play in a normal tournament, much less, I mean, I've never played where you didn't play by the rules.
Huh.
In that respect, I can't, you know.
Okay, well, can you go ahead and continue to comment more on what Jake has said rather than what I've said?
I'm sorry?
Please continue to comment on any further comments you have on what Jake has said, not what I've said.
Oh.
Do you want me to reread part of his last letter?
No. It's very difficult for me to ascertain what he's talking about when he won't talk to me. I mean, I can only surmise what he's saying. But anytime you say a few players get to play all the time because our goal is to win, then that's not a ministry. And I will argue with somebody about that to the very end. You're not ministering to anybody when you allow a select group of individuals to play and you snub others. That's not ministry. And the idea that you can't play a high level of competitive volleyball and play the way that we're talking about playing, our program was absolute proof that that's not true. We had serious AA players play on our program. Now, obviously, they came to the program not to get their adrenaline rush of pure competition that they might get when they were playing in a tournament. But that didn't stop them from playing all out at full tilt. No, I mean, they still... I mean, we... Now, you're talking about... For one thing, I kind of have to half snicker under my breath when the descriptions of players are incorrect. It indicates a lack of knowledge about volleyball, not only rules, but volleyball as a sport.
What are you referring to?
At this point, one of the people said you get to decide who are hands. I assume you mean who's the center.
You see, that was going to be a question of mine. Is it possible within the context of high-level volleyball for ministry that you could do a 5-1?
Yeah, but what we would always do is run a 5-1 and have an alternate setter in one rotation.
Because if there was more than six people, your main setter would rotate out, correct?
Exactly, yeah. So it didn't take away any of the strategy or the ability. I mean, that to me is like, it took away from the strategy. It's like, what? What the heck is he talking about? It took away from the strategy. I mean, I don't know what kind of things you guys are playing. I don't know if you're running complex offenses. Multiple defenses. I don't know what.
Yes, you do. I've told you before that they'll do things like have, like Jesse would play front row and I'd be the back row counterpart every cycle, six rotations, you know?
Yeah, but that's not a defense or an offense. It's an offense. I mean, are you running a stack? Are you running a through? Or are you running a back row? I mean, there are offenses that are very distinctly defined where players rotate in the match, positions.
I don't think that they're doing that.
Yeah, I don't either. It doesn't sound like. And there are defenses that are the same way. There are types of defense that are structured. You know, I mean, and I just have to look at that and say, well, you know, you're talking about playing competitive, and you're not even. I don't think they're even playing at a level where that's that big an issue.
And then
I don't know. I mean, the frustrating thing to me is everything that we've talked about is just between me and you and hearsay. And I would be more than glad to talk to
Jake,
some of the players about that.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
their ideas. I mean, it's like, but I can tell you that, you know, having played basketball, having played pickup games in gyms, where you go in and I used to go play pickup games at this one gym, and I was not one of the better players at all. Some of the guys that played there were guys that had tried out for the Denver Nuggets and gotten cut. So guys coming out of college that are competent enough to try out for a professional basketball team are playing in our pickup games, you know the level of play is out the ceiling. And in those environments, there were prima donnas. There were guys that, you know, just over the game. And it's like, yeah, okay, but nobody else enjoyed themselves. Nobody else was part of it. Nobody else. But, I mean, that was a pickup game.
Of basketball.
I can't remember a time I ever played in a pickup volleyball game where that was the case.
Yeah.
Where one player just demanded all the attention. I used to play in a pickup game in the mornings because I worked graveyards. Tuesday and Thursday mornings there was a gym that had pickup games. And I used to go play there, and one of the guys that came and played with us, he was 6'6". He had been a setter at the University of Florida men's volleyball team. I mean, you talk about a guy that could play lights out. And he was a consummate team player. He involved everybody. Didn't matter how, I mean, it was pickup. It was anything and everything. There were gals that could hardly pass the ball. And it was just, but we played, we ran 6-2s and 5-1s and different structures, and everybody played, nobody sat out.
Except possibly for one rotation.
Yeah, except we rotate, yeah. And sometimes it would get crowded, there'd be 9 people on each team, and that was a little irritating.
But still, everybody got to
everybody
play roughly
got to
the
play.
Same. Everybody played roughly the same.
Yeah. I've never been any place that didn't. I'm going from my experience. I have never, in 17 years of volleyball, never once did I play in an environment where someone could play one side and not the other.
What, like one row and not the other?
Yeah. I
think it's a good if I can concede as much as I can to them, and it sounds like their usage of the term league, which I've never liked, is really a more valid usage given that it's not, they're not breaking the league up into divisions. It's got really two separate leagues.
Well, it's two separate reasons. See, I really, really dislike when Christian people say, oh, well, the recreational division is for ministry, and the competitive division is different. That just pisses me off, because they are deceiving themselves. They are lying to themselves.
You think that's...
There is no excuse for a competitive division not to be about ministry.
Well, Jake claimed that it is about ministry, even though not everybody gets to play the same amount.
No, that right there tells you it's not.
Well, I agree with you.
Yeah, that right there. It isn't. See the description, when you say more competitive volleyball, I mean, clearly you mean more advanced skill level. When you say, well, we're going to play this person and that person and not that person, that's not about skill level. That is about, I want to win and I don't care about you. And that is, if he thinks that's being a minister, he's self-defeating.
What did you say, self-defeating?
Deceived. He is deceiving himself.
Uh-huh. If they all feel that way, they're all deceiving themselves.
That's quite possible.
Yeah, I think Jake speaks pretty much for everybody. In the
thing. I mean, the scary thing to me is in my years and my experience, when I was first learning to play, one of the best players on the court, my roommate, Dave, was willing to give me unlimited time. If I would work, he would work with me. We'd go in a racquetball court and we'd bump the ball. We'd practice. He'd teach me technique. He'd show me things. He'd explain things. He was one of the very best players. But he had the humility to recognize that he could give of himself to someone else. He didn't have to. He could have said, this is really boring to me. I'm not getting any better doing this with you. One guy said to me one time in the same place, the gym that we would play in, he said, I don't ever play with people like you. And I'm like, what? And he goes, it doesn't make me any better to play with somebody that can't play as well as I do.
Yes, he plays only upward, not downward.
That's right. Now, in a gym like that, it's just an open gym or a competitive environment, there's nothing I can say. I think the guy's an ass, but there's nothing I can say about him doing that. But if you say it's a ministry, and that's the way you feel, I can't buy that. So then I continued to play in the gym, and I would always end up playing on the last team that got together, because what they would do is they had a board, and people would come in, and they would sign up teams. And so you could come in, and if there was a space available on a team, you could put your name on there, and you would be on that team. Now, what a lot of the guys did is they'd get together as a group, and they would sign all six names up. And they would pick their partners. They would pick who they were going to play with. So people came every week and played just their team. And a lot of times it was practice for some teams that came in there to practice for their league.
This is early in your volleyball experience, right?
Yeah, this is just a pickup. This is where I first started playing volleyball. And so I always ended up on the worst team on the court with people who couldn't play at all, uncoachable people who thought they knew what they were doing, they'd run all over the place like idiots and slap the ball across the net, tangle themselves up in the net like tuna.
Yeah.
And so I always ended up playing on other teams. And one night, I ended up playing with these guys from the zoo. Now, these guys all worked at the Denver Zoo. Okay? That wasn't the only thing that they did that was together. They were all gay. And I thought, here's six homosexual guys. Who, one of them came to me, John, his name was John, he came to me, and he said, I can see that you're a pretty decent player, and it must be frustrating to play with all these other players. And he said, I've asked the other guys, and they said, if you wanted to, you could play with us as a rotator. As long as you're willing to let us teach you. And so I did. And for one whole winter, I played every week with the guys from the zoo. And I thought, it's pretty sad when a group, you're more accepted by a group of homosexual guys than you are by the people in your church. But that's pretty sad. We talk about them and how they're evil and bad and all that, but they have a more moral character a lot of times than some of the people in the church do.
Yeah.
Now at the same time, you have to keep in mind, at the same time, I would play basketball on Thursdays at my church. And I was a much better basketball player than I was a volleyball player because I played basketball in college. But this Thursday league, I invited some friends of mine from the seminary to come over and play in the Thursday league. And this one game we were playing, I ended up guarding one of the assistant pastors. And I one of the main things I did when I played basketball is I played defense. And on this one, we had this one play where we broke out in a fast break, and I set a pick, a screen, for the guy with the ball so he could get a layup. And the guy, this pastor that was guarding me, ran head-on into me, and we both went flying on the floor, And he got up, and he was really mad. He's like, this is pick-up basketball, And I'm like, so? You set a screen? What's the big deal, And he got all mad. So a little bit later in the game, he threw an elbow at my head. Now, this is a pastor.
And this is on your team or the opposite team?
Huh?
On your team or off of the other team?
He was on the other team. But we were playing. He took a shot at me. He took a swing at my head with his elbow. I ducked it, so he didn't connect with my face, but he was going for my head. Now, my two friends at the seminary were sitting on the sidelines, and they were furious. They were just livid. They said, you need to go to the pastor of your church and tell him to kick that guy out. And I said, well, what do you mean? He says, well, he took a shot at you. And I said, I know. And he said, you need to tell the staff of the church because that guy should be thrown out of the gym. He shouldn't be allowed to play here. I said, well, there's a problem with that. He's one of the assistant pastors.
And they were shocked.
Oh, they were stunned. They couldn't believe it. Now, I quit playing ball there partly because of that incident. That was what they said, because I went and talked to one of the head pastors about it. What he said was the Thursday league, or the Thursday pickup game at the church, is a place for the pastors and the staff and whatever to go and get some, exercise and fit some frustration or whatever. And
In basketball.
Yeah, and so he felt like that was acceptable that he took a shot at me, tried to hit me with his elbow and injure me. He thought that was okay because in the context of the basketball. And I'm like, you know what? There's not ever a time in the context of basketball when it's okay to take a swing or take a shot at somebody and try to hurt them. I don't care who you are. But if you're a pastor, it's even worse.
Yeah.
So here I am. Now this is the dichotomy that I'm facing. Okay? A pastor at my church took a swing at me, tried to hurt me.
Well, this was from your church.
Yeah.
And you knew him already.
Yeah. And it's on Sunday. I played with six gay guys who treated me like I was a person.
In volleyball.
And they were friendly to me and helpful to me, and they played volleyball with me. And if it hadn't been for those guys, now I played with them, and I got better and better. And I got to the point where I started playing on the more advanced court, and they were like, no, dude, go, you know. It's great, you know, we love playing with you, but hey, you know, if you can play on that other court and you want to do that. So I would come a lot of times to play with them a little bit and then go over on the other court. But
Wait. You're saying that they saw you, the other court was higher level than they were?
Yeah.
And they saw that they had helped you get better than they were?
Yeah.
And they were willing to let you go, leave them and go to the advanced.
They encouraged me to go. I went up to B and started playing really competitive. And of course I had help from my roommate, who was an A player, Dave. And so I went up a level, and then eventually, after about a year, I was playing on the A court occasionally. I would play, early in the night, the A court was full. It was a challenge court only. So you didn't hard to get on.
Yeah.
And then later in the night, there would be teams that only had five players, and they would grab players from the B court that they knew could play, and they'd bring you over, you know. So most Sundays, the last couple of games or the last three or four games of the night, the guys on the A court would ask me to come over and play with them. And that was after a year. Now, you have to understand, I played basketball five nights a week before I started playing volleyball.
Uh-huh.
I was in very, very good shape. Very athletic.
Okay.
So it wasn't something. I played a lot of sports, a lot of variety of sports. So when I picked up volleyball, I just went hardcore. You know, I mean, I went all out. And I was like my roommate. Anytime I was in the house, we'd be sitting in the living room playing with a ball, bouncing it off the wall or something. You know, I mean,
yeah.
But I'd like the kids to carry the ball, basketball around with me all the time. I had a volleyball with me all the time. I'd take it in my backpack to school. And I'd sit out in the grass and bump with somebody, you know.
All right, so where were you going with these several little stories you just told?
Well, it was out of that turmoil, out of that, I shared with you before that I went to church one Sunday morning, and the only people that greeted me were two people that I had played volleyball with. So I realized that there was a fellowship there, and I'm not saying that the fellowship of the church wouldn't be there. Volleyball is superior to that. What I'm saying is that volleyball allowed that fellowship. It broke down the walls. It broke down the barrier. And I thought I felt led by God to do something about it. To say, you know what, it's a sad, sad thing to say that six gay guys in a gym can be better friends to you than your Christian brothers and sisters. And I decided to do something about it. I decided that I would create something that would do that the right way.
And is this how Christian Singles Volleyball in Denver was conceived?
That's how it got started. Yeah, my study. I was in school studying psychology anyway. So, but I studied issues of team sports, deal situations where people are unified by competition and common goals and relationship building and things like that, and sought to establish a program for Christian singles who were lost and wandering, just kind of nebulously drifting through Denver, trying to find a place where they could have a community of people they cared about, where they could get to know the Lord and fellowship together, and something that lifted them up as individuals and edified them and made them better. Hmm. And it was out of that turmoil that came. So you can understand, if you understand that, you can understand that when somebody says to me, oh, it's about the competition, it's more fun that way, it's a different thing, I'm a skeptic. I look at them and I see those same guys back in that gym and I go, no, you're not. You're deceiving yourself. If you really look at it as a ministry, your effort would be to have everyone play at a higher level. Not to say only the people who can already play at a higher level get to play all the time.
But I mean, at some point, don't you do feel it's appropriate to do what you did, and that is that when you created an upper division or upper league, you had to people had to qualify to get into that as opposed to the first league.
Yeah, something like that. What we did was based on skill level and not. I mean,
Well, that's what they're doing here. You only based on skill level do you get put into the allowed to be put in the draft and be picked by a captain.
I would bet that some of the big guys that play the front line all the time in your league would not qualify to play in the upper division of our program in Denver
because they're not good enough in the back row.
Because they don't know how to do anything else. And I would challenge one of those guys. See, what I would say, I wish I could talk to him. What I would say to one of those guys is, let me play basketball with you. And I won't play defense. I'm really good on offense, so I'm just going to play offense. And you guys, somebody else can play defense. I'm only going to play offense. There's no way they would let that happen. Why? Because you play all parts of basketball. Offense, defense, you pass, you dribble, you do it all.
And for some reason, they're not carrying that over into high-level volleyball.
They're not carrying it over into volleyball because they're still playing junkyard ball out in the backyard. They're still playing garbage ball. They're still playing big tall guy at the net swatting the ball. They're not playing team concept. They're not playing all positions. They're not trying to improve themselves or improve those around them. For them, it's just a time to go and have a little bit of fun. And if you have to sit out and not have any fun, they don't care. I guess, I look at it and I say, I hope you don't get offended. I'm going to be a little bit, I'll be straightforward with you. I think sometimes, like myself, you are a little bit abrupt, perhaps a little too direct.
Uh-huh. In what way have I been too direct?
Well, in terms of your relationships with them, I think that, that you're they're not used to that. They're not used to somebody confronting them so directly.
How have I confronted them directly?
All this stuff that you're doing on the internet is clearly
Well, I've tried not to be confrontational. I'm trying to make available to them information that they haven't had before.
Okay, Okay, but Tom, you are a conversationalist.
I have been waiting 3 years to see some meaningful changes.
Uh-huh, and I appreciate that. But I'm just saying, you are being a thorn in their side.
Well, I mean, hopefully in love.
I understand, but what I'm saying is what they're seeing, what they look at. Yep. And I think,
I can't hear you.
But even with that in consideration, even if you say, well, yeah, they might be a little irritated with you, they might be a little put off by the fact that you confronted them, challenged them, I think it is reprehensible that they think so little of you and everybody else that they would say, well, you know, it's not important that you get to play. You should just sit out and work. Because what it sounds like they're saying, I mean, I can't say they are because I don't know them, but what it sounds like they're saying is very condescending. Sounds like they're saying, well, we have allowed you to come play in our competitive division. You should be grateful for any crumb we throw on the floor for you. You should be so ecstatic about getting to play at all. You shouldn't be upset that you don't get a playoff decision.
Well, that is the feeling that I got the last 2 years, especially the prior year, where I say if we had 3 games, I may have gotten to play in one, and I played, you know, back row only.
Yeah, I have to say, I honestly believe, unless they can convince me otherwise, that that's the way they feel.
Yeah.
And
well, let me
if you dare to call that ministry, I call you a hypocrite.
It was surprising to me that after I said to Jake that, you know, it's not fair to let somebody play half the time and somebody else gets to play all the time. And he said, well, I forget his exact reaction, but he didn't seem to feel that's unfair. We have a great time. And, well, I don't. I mean, I even told Chip in a letter, I haven't been happy the last 2 years.
You talked to me about what you would do if they tried to do that. You said you'd get upset and tear your shirt off. My suggestion would be to you to directly confront that individual with what you
did. I didn't hear it. Directly confront who?
That individual, whoever that is on your team, your captain or the guy that's running the league, and confront him directly and say, how can you say that it's a ministry and you get to play and have fun and enjoy yourself all you want, but at the same time, all these other people, because there are other people just like you that sit out, that all these other people, they don't deserve that.
They play only half the time.
Right. Because he says,
half the positions.
We have a great time and we enjoy ourselves, and why aren't you having a great time? Because they have a great time because they get to play.
Well, Jake said he had a great time even when he was playing defense only.
Yeah, right.
And that's what's puzzling.
Not if he was playing what you said, but if he was playing at special position or whatever.
Huh.
I don't believe that a bit.
Well, this year is going to be
If he says something like that, if one of those guys says that, say, all right, if you think it's just as fun to play just the back row, then let's switch. You let me, Tom, play the front row, and the big tall guy, you play the back row, and see how much fun it is. Oh, but that doesn't help us win. Bingo. Ding, 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 ding. You see? It's about competition, not ministry.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my contention. If they want to say, well, we have a lower division that's about ministry, and the upper division is just about winning. Okay, at least they're being honest.
That's what I'd like to get them to see. And that's, and Jake has raised the idea of maybe having a having three, and I'm thinking that may be the case. See, what drove me three or four years...
Why?
Well, no, let me just say this quickly. What I had approached Jeremy about, former sports pastor, was trying to have a clinic where Doug Slank would come in and those that don't know how to play but want to learn, he could teach some basics during some instruction time. And because what's happening, anybody can play in the rec league, and nobody knows how to play volleyball. Nobody necessarily knows how to play. And it seems to me we ought to have instruction for some weeks before the league starts, and that way we could all be on the path to getting better. What they did instead of that was, for those who can play and don't want to be shackled by those who, for whatever reason, haven't learned to play correctly, have the competitive league where we're playing to win. And I can tell you, year before last, I watched the final of the competitive league, and it was so close. They were their three-game match, and they were hopscotching each other, and just long rallies. Everybody was exhausted, and I could tell that the people had lost. And we didn't have any prize that year. This year they're going to have T-shirts, but they didn't have any prize that year or the year after. And I could tell those that lost were just really, really disappointed. But I've been in a church, a different league, where there was a lot of non-Christian teams, and a non-Christian team lost to my team, and yet we put up a really good fight. They were sweating. They came to us afterwards and said, we lost to you, but we really enjoyed playing with you. Thank you for giving us a good workout here.
Yeah.
Those weren't even Christians.
Yeah.
Well, it's a kind of a moot point.
You don't have to be a non-Christian to not have good sportsmanship.
You mean you don't have to be a Christian to have good sportsmanship? That's what you
mean? Yeah, that's what I mean, yeah.
Right. Well, this year is going to be a little bit...
A lot of non-Christians have sportsmanship, a lot of Christians don't.
Yeah.
I think it's... Now, you said those two teams, they played the final. Did everybody get to play during the final, or did they have to sit out?
No, I think the teams were small enough that everybody was playing. I don't remember the rotation
and
stuff.
Yeah, that makes a big difference.
I think they were all playing. They didn't do front row, back row stuff. But, I think they did do swapping in for have the girls set or something. But, the thing I was bringing out of that experience from this was year before last was that the losers were just really, really disappointed. And I thought that both teams played a good game, and maybe they were just disappointed at the fact they were so close a couple several times and then lost it from stupid error. But overall, I just felt the kind of disappointment was not something that should be there when we're there for good sport and fun and fellowship.
No, everybody wanted to win. I can see it as a letdown. You know, they thought they were going to be able to win, and then they didn't quite make it.
Right. Well, this year it's going to be kind of a moot point because there's only seven people on a competitive league team. A shortage of people, so there's only seven people. There will be two girls on a team. I don't know yet whether Tim's going to, if there's one girl absent, whether she's going to be allowed to rotate out. Of course, I guess that won't happen anyway because there's only seven people and one girl's out. There's only six of us, so we will not have the extra people. The year before last, what happened was that worse than last year. Last year, there may be... eight or nine people on a team. The year before, there was like 10 of us on a team. And
I just was thinking about what the guy said about not being able to strategize because the women just rotated out of the court, whatever. That took away the captain's opportunity to strategize by that rotation. It's like, well, if you're going to rotate girls that never go off the court, there's no strategy anyway.
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, if the girls always stay on the court and the guys rotate, switch positions, you can't do what he's saying anyway.
Meaning the girl, if the guy who should rotate on doesn't, he's got to let the girl rotate on ahead of him.
Yeah, if the girls are always on the court, then you have no strategy because the guys are always going to be switching places.
Once the ball's served, you're saying?
Well, no, if you rotate, if you have seven players and the girls never rotate out, the guys are constantly changing positions anyway.
In the lineup.
Yeah, exactly. And so there is no strategy.
Yeah.
And he said the reason he didn't like rotating everybody was because then the guy who was coaching the team didn't have an opportunity to strategize.
Well, no, he was saying he wanted to be able to keep Val, the setter, in all the time.
Yeah, he just wants to rotate six players constantly and never let anybody else be part of that.
Well, now, just a couple side questions. Do you think that it's okay to have a 5-1? Oh, but you're saying if we have more than six people, we still need to rotate everybody off.
We ran 6-2s and 5-1s in our program.
With more than six people?
Yes. And all you had was somebody substitute, somebody set that one rotation.
Yep.
You just had an alternate setter in that one rotation.
Yep.
Sometimes if that person got hot, you let them keep set.
Until he rotates out.
Big deal. Any big deal.
Can't.
I mean, that was, teams, well, we also had a rule that it took a majority to determine what offense you ran. So one person couldn't just say, well, we're going to run a 6-2.
The captain couldn't?
No, there wasn't anybody that could just say, we're just going to run a 6-2. Everybody had to agree. You had to go and ask everybody. And if three people said no and three people said yes, well, then most of the time we had seven or eight players on a team. So, you divide it up, and if more people on the team didn't want to play a 6-2, then you had to play a 5, you had to play in the front row.
You're saying you limited the captain's ability to make decisions.
Well, we didn't really have a captain on the team per se,
We do have captains on all teams here.
Yeah, I know. But we would, that was the decision that the players as a team had to make. That was part of the thing, too, is that the team had to decide. So, there's nothing wrong with running the 5-1 as long as everybody wants to run it. But no. Some people might want to actually set.
Okay.
And what's wrong with that? Are they such good players that they can't let somebody else learn and grow? That's what's confusing to me.
That's what's involved in when you do it for ministry's sake.
Yeah, it doesn't sound to me like they're that good if they can't play the back row.
Yeah.
As soon as a guy that's tall and can hit the ball and block says to me, I can't pass, I go, okay, go sit down.
Yeah.
Not interested in you.
Okay. Well, can you give me a little advice personally concerning how you think I should deal with the events tomorrow night? I won't know until sometime between now and then, maybe even when I get there, what the rule is going to be about whether they have to have, in the upper division, whether they have to have one girl or two girls on the court. I think they're going to require only one, and if that's the case, then I'm not going to have a problem. But if it gets to a point where I have to sit down an extra bench time to let a girl rotate in ahead of me who was behind me, what do you think I should do? Should I just walk out and not come back?
No, I think I would let that go. Let that one go and make because you can't win every battle, but the battle you really want to win is to be able to play. And I would think if they decide that the girls are going to stay on the court, okay, say, all right, I don't like it, I don't think it works well, but I'll live with it. And then go and fight the real battle.
Which is
when they tell you can only play in the back row, you say, no, that's not fair, it's not right.
It's severe, it's 50% instead of 100%.
It's degrading and it's insulting to those people. And if this is just, and Calcutta, say, if this is just an open gym, okay. If it's a church ministry and this is part of the church, it's not okay. That's what I would say. I'd stand up and say, I would point directly to the thing that is wrong.
And I've tried to do that in making these rule changes here we did earlier.
Yeah, but they don't appear to be aware. be willing to do that.
Well, we don't know yet. We don't know yet.
And ultimately, they're probably not going to keep much, but they ought to allow you to play. All other things aside, they should allow you to play.
Now, how do we deal with the situation where you know, Jesse, I go back to what he said last year. He was on my team, and he said, you know, I don't mind not playing all the time. And then Jess comes along. She says exactly the same thing because she plays back row only. She doesn't want to play the front. She'll let her team down. And he feels like if he plays the back row, he'll be letting the team down. So they were a good matchup if they had been matched up. Trouble is, I got matched up with him, and I want to play both rows.
Yeah, I would. If he said that to me, I'd say, okay, well, then if you play the back row and you let me play the front.
He'll say, but that won't help the team win. Because I'm not very good. Because I'm not very good in the back row.
Yeah. Say, then, well, you need to start working on your game, don't you?
Well, what about the girl who says, oh, I'm no good at the front row. I can pass good. And I'd rather let somebody, a tall guy or something, play in the front row.
Well,
what do you say to her?
What I would say to any of them is, you know what? You're never, ever going to get any better unless you actually do it. The only reason you're no good in the front row is you've never played in the front row.
And she can't blame her 5'3" height.
Oh, we had plenty of gals that were short to play the front row. Some of them became very dominant hitters on a woman's net because they played on a men's net.
Yeah.
You'd be amazed at what happened to our girls' leagues. A lot of the girls, because they played in our program with a men's height net, when they went to the woman's height net, they were just pumping other teams. They were kicking their butts because they didn't have to play. They were able to play on a shorter net.
Yeah.
And they were really accomplished. Our women's league is a whole lot better than our men's league did in open competition in other parts of the city.
I'll tell you, this one girl I used to play with years ago, she her husband was probably like 5'8". She was like 5'1", and they play a lot together in an open indoor gym. And she would just, you know, they do drills together, but, you know, and he would set her, and he would set her off the net, and she would jump up high. She would hit the ball right over the net every time. It wasn't high over the net, it was always right over, and it's because she jumped high, she knew she had to keep it low, and put a lot of spin on it so it could come down hard. And she was a darn hard hitter. I loved blocking her because I knew the ball was going to come at the height, right at the height, just over the net. So it was fun to block her, but, I mean, she was a formidable player at only like 5'1".
Yeah.
She knew how to compensate for her height. You know, jump hard, put a lot of spin on the ball, snap that wrist, and watch that ball come down. She almost never hit it long. So.
Well, and if you play, and they'll say, well, but I can't block at the net. It's like, well, then drop off the net and play team defense.
From the front row.
You can play solid team defense without blocking. I still would make them block, but I had gals all the time would say, well, I can't block. And I'd say, yeah, that's right. Okay, but you can set the block. And they'd be like, huh? I'd say, yeah, you can set the block. The outside blocker's job, when there's an outside hit, is to set and establish the block. He's not running anywhere. He's standing right in front of the hitter. The ball's coming to him. His only job is to get his feet in position for that middle blocker. So when that middle blocker comes over, he sets the block and he jumps. The middle blocker doesn't just jump up in the air and go flying by. He goes to the outside block, and the outside blocker times the block, tells him where to put it.
Yeah, but isn't that left blocker useless if she can't get her hands anywhere at all above the level of the net?
Heck no. If you're the middle blocker, you cannot turn and run to the outside set, plant your feet in the proper position, keep your eye on the hitter, go up side by side with a closed block, and defend the ball without someone helping you.
Yeah, but what I don't understand is how a 5'2" non-jumper woman can be of any help there if she her fingertips don't even come within a couple inches of the top of the net on her maximum jump.
You're assuming that the guy on the other side of the net who's hitting has time enough when he goes up in the air to go, oh, there's a real short blocker on that side. I can go down the line pretty much if I want.
Yes, he can.
All he sees is the motion. I mean, I have had people tell me, I can't jump high enough to clear the net. Okay, then jump as high as you can and move your hand. And they're like, what? I said, unless the guy on the other side of the net is a professional volleyball player, he cannot tell the difference.
Well, now, I think I can. If I'm the right side hitter and she is the left blocker, and I see she's blocking.
You go up to hit the ball. You know for a fact you can blast down the line.
And she's not going to touch it.
She's not going to touch it, but you're going to hit right directly to the defensive player in the back row.
Well, yes, but at least I've gotten around her. She hasn't effectively done the block.
The biggest point of blocking the middle is to stop the power angle. It is a lot harder to go corner than to cut the ball than it is to go straight through the power.
So you're saying the short girls team should have a good passer to catch those line shots where the hitter's going over the short blocker.
Absolutely. If you're playing your defense in the right position.
Well, wouldn't it be even...
You make it a much tougher shot.
Wouldn't it even be better for her to just hold us, to stay off the net and let the one tall middle guy block and landline?
Generally, that creates a hubby wife.
Well, not in this context. I mean, wouldn't one good top blocker be better than tall and short?
You have watched beach volleyball, right?
Yes.
And you've seen that serve that goes right down the middle?
Oh, yeah.
Players just stand there and it hits the sand?
Right. Each one thought the other was going to get it.
Right. You got it. No, you got it. That's called a hubby wife.
Yes. But how does that apply to the blocking thing here, where they agree she's going to pull back and he's going to do the solo block?
Because if you drop to the 10-foot line, the back row player should be about a foot behind that line to take the shot. You're in each other's way.
But if the solo blocker can still cover, then it doesn't matter.
The blocker can't do that.
Oh.
The solo blocker can't. I have a hard time. I've had a hard time teaching that as a coach.
See, I'm new. I'm still kind of new at some things here, so I appreciate you telling me.
If you're the middle blocker, the instant you see the set go out, your job as the middle blocker is to stop the middle hit. The instant you see the setter, and that the setter's good, he's going to disguise it. The instant you see where the ball's going to go, you have to turn and run in order to get there.
And I was okay. To block angle, you got to jump up there. Yeah, shift over and then jump.
But you got to turn and run to get to the set. Okay, if you don't know where to start, where to run to, and when the set's going to be hit, you're not going to be much of a blocker. You might get lucky once in a while, but you're not going to be particularly effective. The only way you're going to be really effective is if somebody shows you where you need to jump.
And you're saying the left blocker, a short girl, should do that.
That's right. They should plant their foot where you need to come to. And I used to have video of this of the U.S. Olympic team. They were so good at this. I used to have a video of it, and they showed this. They showed it perfectly from the side. They showed the outside. The center made the set outside. It was high and outside, and the outside blocker established position. The middle blocker turned his head and ran straight to the outside blocker, put his foot right next to the other blocker, and didn't turn his head. He kept looking at the outside blocker. And when the outside blocker left his feet, he went right with him. They both jumped together, they went up, and they rooped the ball, and it was hammered into the floor because they were perfectly set. And that, I had a video of that. That is the quintessential volleyball block. That's what makes the middle blocker so dominant. It's well, when the outside player tells him where to be and when to go.
And you're saying this is still helpful to do even if the left blocker is too short and can't jump.
It teaches the middle blocker how to properly play his position.
Well, we're probably not up to that level.
If this guy's playing in pickup in co-ed league, whatever, at the college, it's going to make him a better player.
Yeah. Everybody's going to be a better player.
Fundamentally,
sure.
The whole thing is predicated on team, on everybody working together. And if any part of that is out of play, it's broken. That's just, I always go up for a block. Always at least present the image. I challenge, when you go up to hit, you're looking at the ball. You may, in the back of your mind, you may think, that person's left the line open. That person's too short to block me. Power stroke is take away your power hit. I'm winning.
I just lost that last point there.
I said, even if all I accomplish by having a short player try to block is to force you to go somewhere besides through the power angle, I'm winning.
Because you go have a good defense backing up the girl.
Right. And it's a whole lot harder for you to hit one solid down the line than it is to hit right through your power stroke.
And what do you do about the case where I'm hitting... Oh, I forgot what I was going to say. Oh, many times I've been told by the higher skilled people, this is even in my good pickup Monday night group, don't block him, he's not a hitter, or she's not a hitter. Don't waste your block. She'll just dink it over you almost every time. You need to stay back so you can help dig it. What do you say to that?
No, that's horrible defense.
Why?
Because if that person hits the ball right at the height of the net, you're going to stuff it into the floor. Why wouldn't you block?
Oh, you mean it's going to be a dribble to the floor? Dribble over the net and hit the floor.
Assuming they didn't put anything on the ball, just because somebody's not a big hitter doesn't mean they can't smoke the ball into the backcourt.
So even if they're not, the hitter's not really a hitter, always block everybody.
I play a solid team concept of defense, and that's a terrible defensive.
So even if I never get to successfully block this weak hitter, they always dig it up, then I'm not wasting my block, huh?
What's the block for?
It's to contact the ball and send it back.
Nope.
Go ahead.
The block is to make the other team hit the ball to your defense.
So it doesn't matter whether I contact it or not as a blocker.
That's right. You have watched beach volleyball.
Yes.
Okay? Have you seen the signals where they go cross line and behind their back?
Yep. Okay. I'm going to block a line with this if it's from
correct.
The left or angle.
Or it gives them a blank signal and says, I'm just going to go for the block altogether.
I'm not going to block at all.
No, I'm going to block. I'm just going to go whole hog wherever he's at, which is a really difficult call for the defensive player, but if a big blocker is on his hot and he thinks he can stuff the guy, he's going to do it every now and then.
Yep.
Then the defensive player just has to play by instinct, but most of the time they do call line or cross.
Yep.
Okay, so the guy that's blocking is telling the guy in the backcourt where he's going to play defense.
This is why in the same group I'm sometimes told if I'm a solo left blocker to block angle because the left rear guy in my back row says he's going to dig line, and so I should catch the angle and let the hitter hit line, and he'll catch the line shot, right?
Yeah, because it's a lot harder to hit line with any force than it is.
What my people are saying is right.
When you approach the net to hit, you approach directly into your power angle.
Yeah.
If you come straight over the top and hit the ball with a solid stroke right along that angle, your chances of scoring a kill are a lot greater. So if I can make you go line or cut or dink over the top, I win.
And so therefore, if I'm a left blocker and I'm a solo blocker, it is right for my teammates to say, hey, block angle, whereas my inclination as a left blocker is to block line. They say I should block angle, and therefore if it goes line, our back row catches that.
That's right. You're forcing the hitter to hit to your defense. That's the whole point. Now, if you can score points by stuffing the block, good for you. But the whole point of it is to get them to hit to your defensive players. And you play the back row defense structured in such a way that you're defending against what your blocker is forcing them to hit.
Would you say in general, no matter who's playing, that if you're a left blocker, you should block angle?
No, if you have a center blocker to go with you,
I'm talking about solo block.
If you're solo blocking, you take the angle away.
Okay, all right.
Because your back row is set up for you to do that.
Should be, yeah.
Yeah, the most dominant stroke in volleyball is that power angle.
Yeah.
And if you can get it, you're going to kill the other team every time, so you want to take it away.
Okay.
And even if doing that is just a matter of moving your fingers in front of their face and distracting them enough that they can't hit it right, it doesn't matter if you get above the net.
Okay. Well, one last thing.